Previously on Dry Powder.
If you're going to execute a buy and build strategy, it needs to be stable.
Tim O'Connor, a partner at Bain & Company, explained the necessary conditions for a buy and build deal to work, including stable revenues, a fragmented market, and a long tail of targets. But are those conditions sufficient? Not quite. In fact, none of those factors in isolation will put your buy and build deal on a stable path to returns.
The best returning deals are ones that have multiple arbitrage in addition to both revenue and cost synergies.
What you really need to firmly plant your deal on solid ground is real synergies. And I say real synergies here because it's all too easy to imagine 1,000 synergies blooming between a platform company and its smaller competitors. But what happens as you shift from the buying to the actual building phase? Maybe the company's not large enough. Maybe the management team isn't sharp enough. Maybe the IT systems aren't there to support the synergies and the value creation to come. Today on the show, Tim O'Connor and I talk about synergies, real and imagined, and how a practical plan can help you generate attractive returns, even when multiples move in the wrong direction. I'm Hugh MacArthur, and this is Dry Powder. In my experience, there are two different kinds of synergies. There are kind of more administrative synergies from simply getting larger, and then there are real operational synergies. And while they're both good, examples that I've seen where there are real operating synergies are always the most powerful because they tend to create the most value. One that I remember from some years ago was in the waste management industry. If you owned a landfill, that was a tremendously valuable asset because landfills are very hard to get approved. So if you own a landfill, you can charge an awful lot for someone to dump their garbage into your landfill. So the more trucks you have visiting a landfill, the more money you actually make. And therefore, buying up contiguous waste management collection businesses so they can drop things into your landfill instead of somebody else's landfill became a very busy and very attractive buy and build strategy.
Yeah, in retail health, most of the equity value creation was simply just multiple arbitrage. But when you have something like dermatology, it turns out that the average person has to wait 6 weeks to get a dermatology appointment. And so one of the leading consolidators came up with this sort of probably not that amazingly sophisticated thought, but it turns out lots of people have life events and they cancel their appointments at the last minute. And so instead of having 12 appointments in a day, they might do 10 appointments. And so why don't we just call everybody who has an appointment 6 week out and say, hey, I got a cancellation today. Do you want to come in? And so what they were able to do is increase the throughput from 10 to 12 in a given day. And we see that in a lot of route density-based businesses, whether it's shredding businesses where your cost can go down substantially by buying a business that's adjacent to places that you pick up from. It could be like door and dock repair where your techs can do 6 jobs in a given day instead of 4 or 5 jobs because they have less drive time. And you're paying them for the same 8 hours either way. You can get more revenue per tech.
Mm-hmm. I think that hub and spoke kind of model that you're describing is interesting. Another one that comes to mind on the cost side is in security monitoring. And that's a space where we've seen really for well over a decade, a lot of private equity-led consolidation. And it turns out that the value in doing that is really about, number one, buying contiguous territories so you have extra sales offices and can convert more people to be your customers. But very importantly, I only need one central station to monitor thousands and thousands and thousands of houses. You know, these central stations are like the operations room in a nuclear power plant, right? There's screens everywhere. There's things blinking everywhere. There's people on the phone everywhere. And if I can pump more customers into another central station, that means I can shut down the central station of the company that I just bought, saving a tremendous amount of cost and G&A over time. So it seems like a lot of the synergies that we're describing in some of these examples are around that type of model. There's something at the center, and I can make things more productive in the arms or the spokes, if you will, by putting them together either on the cost side or on the revenue side.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the best performing assets were ones where there was both revenue growth and cost synergies. An example, roofing distribution deal. Not only were there some procurement savings with key suppliers, but they just had a sales culture where they were able to sort of grow 2x of all the acquired businesses by applying that sort of sales culture.
Okay, so let me try and put this picture together from what you've been saying then. What we need to have a good buy and build algorithm, if you will, or repeatable model, is we need to have a stable industry with predictable, stable growth. We need to have a very fragmented industry, so not just the private equity firm in question, but the next private equity owner also has room to continue the buy and build strategy. And we need to be in there early if possible, but certainly not too late. We need to have a stable platform that can really be built upon. It is a rock that can be built upon, not something that can't support lots of additional operations, EBITDA coming in, complexity, et cetera. And we need to have and want to have some real synergies, you know, whether they're on the revenue side, cost side, or both, as a way to continue to drive value and also kind of hedge my risk a little bit on the multiple arbitrage, because we can't really predict with a high degree of efficiency 5 years from now what the multiple arbitrage in any one industry is going to be. Does that sound right?
All that sounds right. And I think the next chapter is likely going to be mergers of the consolidators. You know, over the last 30 years, as we've watched that, that's just riskier. Accretive tuck-ins, you have certain multiple arbitrage that you take advantage of. When you have two pretty similarly sized companies that you're trying to merge, there's a lot of cultural issues that may or may not work. There's a lot of key people you may or may not be able to retain. And so your ability to keep your existing profit sometimes happens and sometimes doesn't.
So you're saying this is more like scale M&A than buy and build?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a mixed track record.
Do you ever look at a business and say, well, is this one business that I'm adding on to, or is this 20 different companies that are all put together still essentially operating as 20 different companies? And what kind of risk is there in that?
Big risk. And I think we always see a warning flag when the businesses themselves aren't really integrated at all, that they're on multiple financial platforms, that they have decentralized management. Essentially, it's a holding company that was trying to execute on multiple arbitrage, but they haven't created a company. And because they haven't created one particular company, they haven't proven that they can buy things and integrate them yet. An example where this has not gone well is, do you sort of migrate everybody to a common platform? The systems don't talk to each other. The customer doesn't get the right product. And all of a sudden, you know, if something goes from 98% on time in full to 87% on time in full, all of a sudden you have customers that are leaving.
Right. Is essentially what I'll call IT risk, for lack of a better term. And I'll give you one example. And from my experience, that was it's a very sexy business. It's quarries. So we're talking about rocks that we're selling here. Turns out that that's an industry where nobody really had taken a scientific look at how much it's going to cost somebody to drive their truck 200 miles down the road to the next quarry to get the same bucket of rocks and then deliver it over to the customer. And so there was a lot of pricing flexibility that actually an individual quarry had that nobody really understood. And so the EBITDA increase potential was huge, as much as 40%, simply by understanding the competitive alternatives the customer had and therefore what you could price. The problem was that the platform company did not have robust IT systems and couldn't keep the pricing under control. So the idea was there, the value was there, but they massively struggled to implement it and keep track of it over time because they didn't have the required systems. And it actually took a substantial amount of investment and years longer than the client had intended to realize all of this value because of that. So I think regardless of what you're looking for, there's some element of key man risk, management talent, platform stability, IT, depending upon where you think the systems are, the platform has to be built for purpose. So having the right platform and making sure that it's a rock that you can build something steadily upon, if you will, is critically important.
So Hugh, given where market multiples are today, do you see this as a trend that's going to have to continue, or do you see it abating?
I think it's a trend that's going to continue, Tim, because it has to continue. You mentioned that prices are very high. I don't think any of us foresee a decline in prices in terms of multiples anytime soon. The forces are structural that are keeping prices high. And in that element, private equity firms have to find ways to buy businesses where they can actually create value. And buy and build is one of those enduring strategies where you can create value. We've talked in the past that the deal count that private equity industry has had over the last 5 to 6 years has dropped by over 20%. So the number of companies that private equity firms are able to buy and are buying is going down. The corporate M&A market writ large is not going down. There are about 40,000 companies that get traded every single year. It's just that the share that are going to private equity buyers is declining. So how do we reverse that situation? Well, if I can act more like a corporate as a private equity fund. If I actually have synergies, I'm buying businesses not just as a financial owner, but I'm buying businesses as a strategic owner. I have synergies. I have cost synergies I can take out. I have revenue opportunities that I can take out. I have scale that I can add that make my business more valuable. That better allows me to compete with some of the corporate capital out there. It allows me to get more deals done. And so I really don't see any forces that would actually reverse that trend over time. We're really only limited by the kind of things that you were talking about, which is how many industries out there are attractive for buy and build plays? How many platforms are attractive? How much fragmentation is there? And can we be the first to identify those industries and make sure that we benefit as a private equity investor the most from being in there early?
Definitely. You want to make certain that there's enough stuff to buy, that there aren't too many consolidators trying to execute the strategy.
Well, Tim, this is great. Thanks for coming by and really helping us dive deeply into the world of buy and builds.
Thank you.
For a deeper dive into the world of buy and builds, you can email us at drypowder@bain.com. I'm Hugh MacArthur. Thank you for listening.